Spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
And welcome to the 3CR Spoken Word program. I'd like to acknowledge that we are broadcasting from the lands of the Wurundjeri people and recognise their elders past and present. Today I'm speaking to Anne-Marie Tafu, who is a poet from Wangal country, which is in Western Sydney, and an Australian-born Maori poet, editor, cultural producer and weaver. Welcome, Anne-Marie.
Thank you so much, Di.
Yeah, it's so exciting to see your new book, Metal. Tell me about your journey in poetry. When did you start writing poetry? Has it been a lifelong thing?
I guess it did start in those early years with the diary writing, as most poets do have that early beginning, or that's my experience anyway. A lot of writers do start curled up as a kid with their very secretive diary. So by no means was I planning on writing poetry as a kid. The words just kind of poured out. And then I guess it became much more formal in my mind, or possible in my mind, the idea of being a poet, when I was co-director of the Queensland Poetry Festival up in Brisbane. And that experience certainly cemented that poetry could be a form that I could really engage with and work with and play with. I'd been working at the State Library of Queensland prior to that and managing the Queensland Poetry Slam.
Wow.
So it'd been around, spoken word poets specifically prior to the Queensland Poetry Festival, and also I've been producing work for the Woodford Folk Festival. So I had had a lot of exposure and been around a lot of poets and, platforming poetic voices, but not necessarily concentrating on my own work. But it was really through that Queensland Poetry Festival, that co-directing experience, that really, as I say, opened up that poetry as a potential pathway, as something that could be taken more seriously than just, that little kid that curled up at home and wrote in my diary.
Yeah. So tell me, did you have teachers or mentors when you started writing seriously as a grown-up?
Yeah, I did. I did die. I was lucky enough. The first and most significant mentor / teacher that really impacted my work was Joy Harjo, who actually was the poet in residence and came over throughout the, I think it was the 2016, I might need to be corrected on that, 2016 or 2017 Poetry Festival. So Joy Harjo was America's first Native American poet laureate, and was installed in the position for 4 years, I think. Getting to meet Joy and, have those conversations that really impact you. I was just actually looking at one of her books that she gifted me for my an essay that I'm writing for my master's at the moment, and it's called Conflict Resolutions for Holy Beings. And she signed it, Ani, thank you so much for this opportunity to be here. May these words land with you. Oh, there we are, 2017.
Amazing.
She dated it. Yeah. So Joy would have been my first teacher, And then I was awarded the Next Chapter Fellowship through the Wheeler Centre in 2022 or 23. And with that came the opportunity to work closely with a mentor. And luckily enough, I was able to be mentored by Natalie Harkin. And that was a very significant experience. Other people like Tony Birch, many Māori poets, Anahita Gilday, Alistair Punga Somerville, Pacifica writers like Courtney Cena Meredith, Tusiata Arabia. There's a great, great list of really significant First Nations poets that have taught and continue to teach me. They don't know that they are, but they at this very moment, their work and what they do continue to shape me and mentor me.
Excellent. And now you are born in Australia, but you have Maori heritage. Tell me, how did you get in touch with your Maori heritage growing up here? And
it's a kind of an interesting question for anyone that's born outside of the country where they belong, where they are Indigenous to, connected to, and it really, I guess that there are a couple of threads that really led me back to Aotearoa. One of the most significant is learning my genealogy and who I'm connected to. I'm one of the really significant people in my whānau, in my family, is my great aunt. Her name's Dame Finna Cooper, and she led the 1975 Māori Land March, which was a kind of a seminal hikoi, a seminal march for the reclamation of Māori land. And it really galvanised and energised and propelled politically and socially Māori land rights. There's actually a film on Netflix about Finna, if anyone wants to watch it.
Well, I'll watch it.
What's
it called?
Finna, it's just named after her, W-H-I-N-A.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It might be on SBS On Demand now as well.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but it's... So, you know, that kind of... Yeah, learning about who I am through her, and it's actually where the title of this collection came from when I was doing some archival work, some research.
So how did the title come about? Sorry, tell me that.
Yeah, so metal is a word that my nana would have used to tell the truth. It's one of those kind of vintage words that I really love, and it came about through researching Finna. And I remember finding a newspaper article that described, at the time in 1975, one of the journalists described, the line was something like, it takes great metal that Dame Finna Cooper possesses to lead the people on this kind of march, you know, and it was reading that word and seeing the way it's, yeah, that spelling and that... I don't know, something about it really struck me, and I thought, oh, I'm going to stick with that, because that thematic, that resilience, that strength is something that I, relate to.
Yeah, you grew up in Australia, and how did you reconnect exactly? You went back to New Zealand or Aotearoa when you were older, or what happened?
Yeah, so, we travelled back regularly as, you know, as children. We'd go and visit all our aunts and uncles and our cousins. And I guess what happens when parents divorce, there's a sort of a split in connection. And then I kind of went my own way. And it wasn't until I kind of returned to a relationship with my dad, who is or was Māori. He's now unfortunately passed. And it was in reconnecting with him in my 30s that I really wanted to understand who I am as a whole person. And so it's always that going back. I think it's okay to read and, you know, learn about who you are, but it's always essential, I think, if you can, to return to your country, and in my case, to return to my land, to return to my whenua, to return to my marae, to really look at the place where I'm from and see our urupa. You know, we have a family cemetery. Yeah. And it's going back. It's that returning process.
Okay. Well, yeah. let's start with the first poem in the book.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Would you like to read High Tide of Relationality?
Thanks, Di. High Tide of Relationality. Ko te renga toku maunga, ko waiho te awa, ko hokianga te moana, ko waiho nui arue te marae, ko wairiramangi te whare tupuna, ko te rarawa toku iwi, ko te waiko toku hapu, ko Anne-Marie te whiu, toku ingoa. My pepeha, my descent profile, opens you and me up to the possibility of blood connection and situates us in relation to the landmarks where my bones belong. One of the starting points between you and me is here on this page. I'll hold on to one end of a line, you the other. Let's pull the rope tight, learn from the tension and build from the slack.
Lovely image, you know, the relationship between the writer and the reader on the page.
Thank you.
Great work. So there's a lot of autobiographical work in Metal. And one of the poems is Domestic. Would you like to say anything about that one?
Yeah. Just first of all, it's the first poem in the collection that was ever published. It was selected by Natalie Harkin for a Cordite Journal, call out. So this poem means a lot to me because Natalie Harkin selected it in the call out. You know, it was a blind read and she saw value and depth in the work. So it means a lot to me that, you know, this piece was selected. And it's a piece that's written because it's something that happened in my childhood. It's one of those reflective pieces. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and read it, hey?
Yeah, thank you. Great.
Domestic. Police car in driveway, bed unmade since yesterday. Blue and red lights up the street. Not far to fall, Christmas-induced abuse. Flee home at midnight, leave behind kids and plants to be watered. Able to walk, but not think. Dog hiding in the garage, empty checkbook, empty tank, from suburb to city to sanctuary, soil to cement. Each body is its own. Owned by your husband, the church, the government, don't pack the dirty dishes. No more knocks at the door. The coolest room in the house is the bathroom. Jealousy overflows in the kitchen. Still wearing wedding rings. Falling in lust so young with a man from afar. Serve your husband, not the house. Set off the fire alarms in the kitchen. Wear the pearls he bought you. Spill gravy on your dress. He will sit at the head of the table. You will take your place to the left. Be grateful for the blender, microwave, and mixer. Don't touch the paperwork he brings home. The iron keeps his collars hard. You will not be believed. You own unwashed washing. Turn up the transistor. Smile at his parents. Never know his origins. Vacuum while he mows. Calculate your escape on Sunday after Mass. Every day, repeat.
Yes, well, you take us on a journey to that world very effectively. And
Yeah, thank you, Di.
It's a very vivid story.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a very vivid memory, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you've got another poem which is about family, which mm-hmm. is called Blood Brothers. Where did this poem come from?
I have three brothers. Unfortunately, one of them passed away unexpectedly last year.
That's very sad.
Yeah. He was only 45 and he lived with schizophrenia and, you know, quite a few other mental health issues, as does my other younger brother. So this poem really came about out of me going on that journey of reclaiming my Māori ancestry and seeing them and them being in my life, me as their main carer for so many years, and the experience of being a sibling, you know, that ocean of information and knowledge that separated us. Yeah. So.
Yeah, would you like to read it?
Yeah, sure. It's called Blood Brothers. I recite a karakia for my brothers. They would prefer I bring kebabs. I tell them about the hokianga. They tell me about their bills. I explain tangata, whenua. They turn up the TV. I dream of tāne mahuta. They roll a cigarette. I summon the name of our ancestors. They take their medication. I miss our marae. They put out the bins.
It's a wonderful dislocation there, you know. Between
that's the word. That's the word, Guy. That's exactly what I was searching for. Thank you.
My pleasure.
But
just for us non-Māori people, would you like to just explain, I recite a karakai for my brothers. What's a karakia?
Karakia is a prayer.
Right.
And when I say I explain tangata whenua, that means people of the land.
Right.
Tangata, people.
And hokianga, what's that?
Yeah, hokianga is a place. So I belong to hokianga. So as someone with my ancestry, my lineage, that's where I am from. So hokianga is a place, a very beautiful place. In what's called Northland, if you travel up on the west coast from Auckland, about 4 hours north of Auckland.
I've been to the Bay of Islands.
Yes, okay, I'm with you, so go, that's east coast.
Okay.
Now head over to the other wild west side.
Right, okay, haven't
Bay
been
Bay of
there.
Islands is beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And Tane Mahuta.
So Tane Mahuta is he's the god of the forest. He is, he embodies the god of the forest. He is the god of the forest. And you can go visit Tane. He's a really significant, beautiful tree. If you Google Tane Mahuta, you'll be able to see a picture of him. He's what's called a kauri tree, which is like an extremely giant eucalypt tree.
Incredible.
It's a native tree to Aotearoa. Yeah. You might have said, did you come across any kauri tree in your travels?
I didn't know enough to look.
Right. I understand. No.
And I miss our marae. Is that a family or is it it's the place of meeting?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, Dai. Our marae is a meeting place for Māori. So every tribe, every iwi, every hapu has a marae, so that's a place where we can go to have funerals, have gatherings, have wananga, you know, meetings. It's a place to be.
Wonderful.
A place to be together, yeah.
Yeah, I went to the marae at
Waitangi.
Yeah, correct. And they did some wonderful explanations of some things and dances and various things, which was great. But
I love that you've been there.
Yeah, well, it was a wonderful place to visit, and how impressive that New Zealand has a treaty with its First Peoples rather than...
I agree.
We never got around to it, which is not much of an excuse.
No, it's certainly a work in progress. And, treaty now, yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is the 3CR Spoken Word Program, and I'm talking to Anne-Marie Tufu about her new book, Metal, which is out with the University of Queensland Press. Now, the next poem we're going to read is called Further Than Jonah, and it's about that absolutely terrible ABC program, Jonah from Tonga. Can you tell me something about how the Pacifica people reacted to that TV show?
Yeah, pretty abominable. It was a really abominable show, vile really, and just lazy. And when Winnie Dunn was one of the guest editors for the Rabbit Journal a couple of years ago, she kindly selected this piece. The theme for that call-out was brownface, and I'm pretty sure at the same time this the Jonah character was really being elevated, which I hated. So I wanted to write beyond the character, hence the title. Shall I go ahead and read it?
Yeah, and just for those who don't remember, the actor's name is Chris Lilly, and he literally put himself in blackface in order to make a caricature of a Tongan schoolboy, which, you know, upset a lot of people. And it wasn't just a one-off, one-minute skit. It was a series of programs and then a second series of programs. And, you know, if ever anybody wants to criticise the ABC for failing to understand the sensitivity of different communities, we can only point to Jonah from Tonga and say, there is the evidence.
Well said, Di. Well said. That's exactly right.
It's disgraceful. You know, it's really disgraceful that it happened.
What was it, 2020?
No, I think it was before COVID. But, I mean, it was a, you know, the program was a really terrible program, and it went on and on and on, for two series. It was very hard to understand the programming mentality behind it. Anyway,
as Chelsea Watego would say, another day in the colony. So this one's called Further Than Jonah. Mostly I just thought it was a really funny character. My ears were the first to leave, heading off without packing anything. Lobes tired of hanging on, waiting to hear something different, tired of listening to the same old, same old. I think I'm pretty brave with putting myself out there and looking stupid and doing things that are potentially offensive. My eyes take off. Saw how easy it could be without a slight or doubt in sight to not have to watch over and over the same old. It's kind of funny that there's only certain races that it's an issue. My hands grew tired of holding on, reaching out for tomorrow. Nails bitten to the quick by my anxious mind, palms furious, the same old. I've already gone far enough with the blackface thing. I can't go much further. The last things to leave were my feet, my heart, my mouth, my wairua. Stuck around, keeping my brown skin good company. It will take time for the new old.
Yes, well, we want the new old.
We want the new old, Di.
We're sick of the old old. We've had it with that. Bring it on.
I'm with you. That's right.
Yeah. And there's a candidate for this year's Miles Franklin Award, isn't there, by a Tongan Australian writer. Who is that and what was the name of the book?
That's right, Di. So that's by the remarkable Winnie Dunn. Her book called Dirt Poor Islanders. Winnie's the general manager of a sweatshop over there in Western Sydney. And I'm crossing my fingers for Winnie that she's a winner.
Yeah. That would be amazing. I'm looking forward to reading that book. Now, I think we've got time for one more poem. There's an amazing poem at the back of the book. It's the very last poem, Pulse. Would you like to tell me, how did this poem arise?
That was written on New Year's Eve. When was that? 2023, I think it was. Yeah, it was written just close to midnight, and I was thinking about time, a reflection of time. So out poured this piece.
Okay,
that's called Pulse. Every 26 seconds, Papatuanuku releases a tiny seismic rumble that ripples out, searching for a harmony. It is the heart beat of our ancestors.
Wonderful. What is
Papatuanuku?
Yeah,
that's Mother Earth.
Okay.
That's Mother Earth. Yeah, yeah. And I'd encourage people, I purposefully didn't include translations for this collection because as I started with the poem of that reaching out, that collaborating with the reader, I'm very much hoping that readers are inclined to or compelled to or motivated to jump on the Māori Dictionary, which is a application on the website, and just Google the meaning of these words. So rather than me spoon-feeding or being patronising to people, I'd much rather people learn under their own esteem in their own time.
Yeah. It's an amazing thought as well, that the heartbeat of the earth is in sync or in harmony with the heartbeat of the ancestors.
That's exactly right, Di.
Yeah. I mean, that's something wonderful.
Yeah. Each of us, all of our ancestors, that's how, I guess, that one way that they're communicating with us, if we listen hard enough.
Incredible. Well, with that wonderful thought, we'll have to close here, but it's been great to speak to you. I've been speaking to Anne-Marie Tuvieu about her new book, Metal, published by the University of Queensland Press. Thank you for coming on the program.
Such a privilege, Di. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And thank you. And my name is Di Cousins, and this has been the 3CR Spoken Word Program.